Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Kammer, usually bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming, but not today. Today, we have a very special guest on our show, independent wrestler and SCW Pro superstar Eric Esknight is joining us today. He is a mainstay out of Eastern Iowa and West Northern Illinois area, plus some pit stops down in Texas and throughout the Midwest, but primarily wrestles out of SCW Pro in the Quad City, Iowa, Illinois area. We have a fun chat about his current character, training with Seth Rollins and Merrick Brave via the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy, and his goals for the coming year and his career. So, without any further ado, we're going to get the sponsors in real quick and get it out of the way, and we'll take it away with speaking with Eric Esknight. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Raise Energy for that pickup. Raise comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently Italian ice, which is great, by the way, and it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like CASS, drink Raise Energy. Hey, everyone. I am here today with special guest. He is a former SCW Pro Tag Team Champion and former holder of the QC Cup, trained by the Black and Brave Academy. He is Eric Esknight. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm good today. How are you?
I am doing quite well. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you for agreeing to appear. I don't do too many guests, so it's awesome whenever I get someone to hop in, especially someone that being a local boy, getting to see grow before my very own eyes.
My pleasure. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I jokingly say I'm going to lob you softballs, but we are going to start the party with a slight off-speed pitch. You were the SCW Pro QC Cup holder until about a week and a half ago. What happened, man? I wanted a champion on my show.
Hey, whenever we set this up, man, I was the champ. I wasn't planning on not being the champ. Let's be honest here.
That
was not supposed to happen, and it won't happen again.
I'll see. You got cocky with the open challenges. I mean, Matt Cage is a legend in his own right, but man,
right.
Joking aside, though, that was a shock when I saw that happen. But you know, bigger and better things. You got a rematch coming up with him, right? Has it been?
I don't know that it's gonna be right off the bat. It's not at this upcoming show. It's not a Hawkamania. I think he's gonna be ducking me for a while. I'm not gonna lie. I would too. I would duck me too. But I'm gonna get whenever I get my shot at when I get my rematch. It's mine again. That's my. I was chosen for it. You know what I mean? Like that's my cup.
Exactly. And you'll be prepared this time as well. So
right.
I'll be secretly rooting for you. I mean, yes, I'll have to hide it in between booze and the side eyes from the wife.
Hey, everybody's secretly rooting for me, man.
Oh yeah,
everybody's secretly rooting for me.
Just say we don't like to admit it, but again, you're chosen. Like we can't fight it. Not right. For long anyway. But taking things back, we'll call it to the beginning. Obviously, wrestling is, I don't want to call it fully niche. It's more accepted now than I think it's ever really been. But how did you get into it specifically? What was your interest in it?
I remember the first match I ever watched, some random SmackDown match between MVP and Batista. And I just remember watching in the living room with my dad. And I just loved it from that moment. Like, Batista was always one of my favorites after that day. I always hated MVP after that day. Like, they set the tone for, like, I'm the good guy, he's the bad guy, right off the bat. And I've always loved stories. Even in high school, I was a good writer. All my writing teachers ended up being, like, their favorite student because I liked to write. But so I've always liked stories. I've always liked like comic book action. And like, that's what wrestling really is. It's live comic book action with stories. So I got into it. I was watching a random episode on SmackDown and then fell in love.
Did you ever end up doing like the, we'll call it backyard wrestling, or at least just joking around with your friends and throwing each other around?
No, not really. I always wanted to because I was always a big Hardy Boys fan. And I always wanted a trampoline so I could do the same thing. But no, that never happened. Me and my friend Malik, my tag partner, my enemy in storyline, my forever enemy right now. We've done a couple times where we're just messing around outside. And like one time I suplexed him on the back of my car. Just for fun. But no trampolines, no like official league or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably for the best for your body. I mean, obviously wrestling's hard on the body to begin with. And now, you know, you got untrained guys, well, suplexing people on cars.
We were trained at that point.
You were trained at that point.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, then you need to work that into a match and get paid for it.
Right, right. And we did. We had a lot of matches, and we had that that big no DQ match. So we did that.
Yeah, so you did. Hurricane Ronnie'd you through a table. I was there for that. That was
right, right.
He
scarred my lip right here. He got a chair, drop kicked it through my face. That'll always be a part of me now. Yeah. I'm going to get him back. Don't worry.
Oh, receipts are always killer. That's why I'm glad I'm usually on this side of the screen.
Right.
That also means I write a lot of checks. My body can't cash either when I shoot it off too much. But we're going to move on from that, that thing. So you took this fandom and you finally got training with the Black and the Brave.
Right.
So what made you choose Black and the Brave?
Because Seth Rollins was my favorite wrestler at the time. And, I mean, he continues to be, like, one of the top, if not the top, wrestler every single year. So if you want to be the best, got to be trained by the best. And that was my plan from the start. I was actually going to go to college and everything, but last minute I was like, that's not what I want to do. I've always wanted to wrestle. And so my mom was like, all right, that's cool, that's fine, but you got to have a plan. So I was like, all right, Black and Brave Wrestling Academy. So got some jobs, started saving up some money, paid for the school. And while I was waiting, so Black and Brave is obviously one of the best wrestling schools in the world. So whenever you are paying to go enroll and everything, you're not going to be able to just get in and like hop in the car and go. Usually there's not an open class for like 2 years from whenever you're trying to sign up. So I think like right now there's not open classes until 2024, and they might be all already booked out too. So in the meantime, before I went to Black and Brave, I did start training before Black and Brave.
All right.
I had about a year and a half ish of training before Black and Brave and some matches that I worked.
And I was going to bring this up in a bit because I did notice and doing my research. So feel honored. This is the rare occasion where I'm doing like actual little bit of background research in addition to just watching live. Did some time in Texas. You lived in Texas for a while. And so did you train in Texas as well?
Right. So I grew up, my whole life was basically, I grew up in Texas. But so I was born here in Davenport, where the school is located. And then I moved to Texas when I was really, really young. But I still had family here. So I would come up here for the summers. So it was just the craziest thing that Seth Rollins' school happened to be in my birth town, my hometown. So yes, Texas. Me and Malik came up here. We went to the school. We did the program. And then we moved back to Texas for about a year. Did a year of tagging in Texas, and we moved back up here.
Okay. Because I watched a couple of matches from, I was Christian Wrestling Federation out of Texas. So you guys have been, I mean, together since the start of your careers. You guys are going to be, hopefully intertwined
for the rest. I hope so. Yeah. We literally started training the first day, same day together.
That is awesome, especially just that way. Like, I don't know, as a fan, it's great seeing guys who come up together and seeing how their careers, you know, well, both separate and intertwine, like whether they start as a tag team and then break apart, and, you know, are they always going to be directly or indirectly linked together, whether it's, you know, the team gets back together, or are they just going to continue to be rivals, even if they're not directly. Yeah,
there's always history there, like always.
Right.
Kind of like Kevin and Sammy right now. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the fight forever, even when they're kind of sort of on the same team. Or I was going to kick it up old school and reference Strikeforce, that even like after they're done, you know, properly feuding, they were always going after each other if they happened to be in the ring at the same time. But I think a better example is Sammy and Kevin. I'm just dating myself, that's all. Just briefly covering Texas, one thing I thought was interesting, and I just had to bring it up, and no ill will on this because I am not the paragon of like awesome, you know, nom de plumes, but Buck Maverick.
Oh yeah.
What was up with that?
Yeah. So that was that is one of those things that like you bury, but I know there was no ill will in that, but, yeah, that was my first name until I got to Black and Brave. And then I started using it in class and using it in promos. Colby, Seth Rollins was like, you got to change the name, brother. And I had already wanted to change the name. But my previous promotion, the one I started at CWF, they had given me that name and whatever. It was this whole thing. And anyways, I changed it when I got to Black and Brave. Thank God. And to a much cooler name that suits me a lot better.
Oh, I think so. And I did catch the promo where you kind of announced your name change and explained it. And actually, it's a really good promo. And I wish I could remember, like we'll call it the parting line verbatim. But I didn't watch it that many times to do it. But referencing Ez Knight being the spear. Right. And basically, it didn't matter whether it was one person or 800, all will fall due to Ez Knight. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was a good promo. Not a lot of people are ever going to see that one just because it was so early on.
Right.
But yeah, whenever I get to like explain like the meaning behind my name, it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. Even though my finisher's not the spear, at the time it was the spear. But I had to set myself apart. Everybody's.
Oh yeah, spear's getting real. Is slowly becoming like the new DDT. Like you got a handful of guys that and it looks amazing. Exactly. And then everyone else, it's a transition move of varying degrees of looking cool. Right. But taking it back to Black and the Brave, you know, you acknowledged Seth Rollins as kind of like the primary inspiration going through there, and I feel like that is, you know, one of the reasons you go to the Black and the Brave. You're like, oh, Seth Rollins has a wrestling school, like I want to be trained by Seth Rollins if I want, you know, want to be the best, because obviously, like, right, especially right now, he's killing it character work, and totally. he's always been a cardio fiend, like, for sure. so obviously, you know, you want some of what some of the knowledge he's imparting. But no one really ever talks about Merrick Brave and Matt Mayday Crotch. What was it like working with them?
Great. Because I would say Colby is definitely the reason you go to that school. Seth Rollins is the reason that you go to that school. But a lot of times he's doing his own thing. So a lot of times, like with his WWE schedule, so it's usually Merrick and Crotch that you're getting to spend most of your time with and learn from. Yes, you're learning from Seth, and yes, he's coming in and like just giving buttloads of knowledge. But a lot of times it's Merrick and Crotch who are doing the hands-on stuff. So it's great. And like whenever you're like, basically you graduate Black and Brave and you think of SCW as just, you know, another step in your learning. It's like a developmental still. I mean, I'm developing till I'm done wrestling. Anyways, back to the main topic. Crotch and Merrick our hands on there. Crotch, Merrick runs the promotion. Crotch is a vet in that promotion in the locker room. So you continue your education with them even after class is over. So just over the past couple of years, getting to know them as people has been pretty cool. And just working with them and gaining their trust is very cool. They're good people, Crotch and Merrick. Crotch, Merrick, Colby, I learned from all of them.
And what I've seen, like I find that, especially Merrick, and not to discount Crotch in any way, shape, or form, I'm just not necessarily as familiar with his work, we'll say, behind the scenes. But like, I feel like Merrick is a very much like underrated like wrestling mind. And I kind of feel that like a lot of his stuff kind of like he got cut off like fairly early like in his career, especially with some of the ideas he's come up with since then, with his neck injury and whatnot. Like some of the stuff he was doing as the fashionista like 6 or 7 years ago was amazing. Right. And now I'm obviously now he's still bringing chunks of it back with his mini comebacks and whatnot, but you can see his you know handprints all over the product for those of us who go watch SCW. And for those of you who are listening to this that aren't from, you know, Central Illinois, Eastern Iowa area, like you guys, you know, if you're local, go see SCW. Great shows. Love them. I've been going off and on for a decade now. Those of you who have to, you know, use the intrawebs, totally use the intrawebs. Get hooked up with their Patreon, $5 a month, and you get all sorts of like classic stuff there. So derailing everything with a cheap plug for SCW. But since you're there, I mean, it ties in. It's great. But I just do think that's interesting because, yeah, obviously everyone goes in for Seth, but there's, nearly, 30 years, 40 years of wrestling experience also on the training staff. And then also looking at, say, like the SCW roster itself, like Shane Hollister, who's been all over, like throwing him out as well, just being able to work with him. He's been all over like the country. How much have you got to work with Shane?
I've had two matches with him, and the one, they're both great matches. One was in Bluegrass this summer, past summer, and one was in a downtown Iowa City like party, downtown block party, 10,000 people. Me and Shug main evented. That's one of my favorite, if not my favorite match I've ever had. So I have nothing but good things to say about the Shug Shane Hollister. And we're actually like second cousins or something like that. And I didn't even know that until I moved back up here 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, that's crazy. But that Iowa City show. So what was it like working a crowd that large? I mean, not that, you know, the crowds here don't get decent enough size, but there's a big difference between the Walcott Coliseum and, the Paul Ballroom, where there's, just a couple hundred people to the streets of Iowa City.
So it was the craziest thing because it really seemed like that show was going to not be that good. So a lot of your mainstays, a lot of your bigger stars that were in SCW at the time weren't even on that show because they didn't think it was going to be anything. But it was on that day that a lot of the stars that you're seeing now that are you're kind of just now seeing come into the light, that was kind of the day that we stepped up and showed we're this next generation of SCW Pro. That's kind of like a, I would say the main takeaway I have from that show, because we stepped up in front of 10,000 people and we all killed it because we were all ready for it. But like I said, that show, it was like, it was raining. It was supposed to rain. It was like kind of muggy out. And we got there early to set up. There was going to be two separate shows at two different times, but the rain ruined it. So we were like, dang, man, we got here early and we're going to have to wait like 5 hours before the show starts. And we got to wait this many hours before we can even set up. So we're kind of like, at least I am in my head, I'm like, dang, this show's going to suck. And then like, we're setting up, more people are coming and we're setting up, more people are coming, more people are coming. And then like, you can't like, from where I was at, I couldn't see the sea of people on the other side of the ring. So the first match happens, and it's like the loudest crowd I've ever worked in front of, and it's like on a shoulder tackle, and I was like, man, this is gonna be a great night. And they already told me and Shug were main eventing, and then Malik and Devil Dog had their match, and like I said, you see their prominence now in SCW. That day was whenever I feel like both of them were like stepped up, but they had a great match that day, and then that motivated me. I was like, all right, I gotta kill it too. And then you see and you hear that there's 10,000 people there, and I was getting a little bit nervous, but then whenever my music hit, you know, I always do what I do. Whenever my music hits, it's fine. I got it.
So, mindset wise, how do you go into a match, say with 10,000 people, compared to just knowing there's going to be, you know, maybe a couple hundred, or even less?
Well, now there is no difference for me. that day was like, anytime that I am kind of like, okay, it's a big show today. You know, getting like a little nervous. It's good to be nervous. Oh, yeah. But getting a little nervous, I'm like, bro, you may have ended in front of 10,000 and you killed it. So my mindset's the same for a big crowd, 10,000 people crowd, 100 people crowd. My mindset's the same now. Go out there, try and do something that the crowd will remember. Try and do something that will set you apart. Try and make the crowd feel something. If I've done those three things, or even if I've done one or two of those things, then in my head, I have succeeded in the match. Even if it's not the prettiest match, if I've done that, that's what I'm trying to do whenever I go into any match.
And I mean, as a fan, I feel like that, I mean, that is the ultimate line of success, especially at this level, is just getting people to know who you are and be able to just, you know, say, as you put it, set yourself apart. So they, you know, right. Know now this is Eric Asnight. He's going to do X, Y, and Z. You know, in terms of good match, I know there's differing mindsets on it, but like, you know, some people who are having amazing matches aren't the best. We'll call them wrestlers in general. I mean, maybe they have the skill sets, but like looking at like Hulk Hogan, he connected right. with so many people, but most folks don't call him, you know, a good wrestler.
Sure.
But I was just curious, you said there's not much difference, but in terms of connecting with that crowd, is there a difference in the way you go about trying to connect with the larger crowd rather than that smaller crowd? Because I know obviously there's a lot of just, you know, a sea of humanity with 10,000 people, but when you go to the Walcott Coliseum, you know, you're going to be close, you know, you're going to see the people close enough that you could probably touch them, and you know, obviously there's more, I don't know, you see them as maybe as individuals a bit more.
Right. So can you repeat the question?
Okay. I trailed off on that one.
That's all right.
I'm a professional. But I guess, is there a difference in the way you try to connect with the audience given the difference in crowd size?
Little things, just little things. You still are trying to like make moments in the same way. And at the same spots in the match, I feel like with smaller crowds, and I learned this from Seth, from Colby, because I worked a match in front of a smaller crowd. And I did a lot of cool things, but I could have done more to connect. So what he told me is, and I really liked it, is with smaller crowds, you got to just involve them more. Like you said, they're individuals, and it's a smaller crowd. So people are nervous, more nervous in smaller crowds. When you're in a big WWE crowd, you can be loud and it doesn't matter. But whenever you're in a smaller crowd, you might not want to be the one to be the first to boo, or you might not want to be the one to start the chant. So you as the wrestler, me as the wrestler, I've got to bring you into it. So I've got to find you in the crowd and look at you, or you've got to say something to me and I've got to say something back. Like, I've just got to involve you more personally. That would be the difference between the small crowds and the big crowds, where in a big crowd, I kind of got to make myself as big as I can to where everyone can see what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I still have to do that in a smaller crowd, but even more so in one of these 10,000 sea of people are looking over people crowds.
That makes perfect sense. And actually it ties it back to like the creative and well, I've heard they call it half jokingly, wrestling theater for jocks. It's all the theater kids now they get to rough each other off. And I definitely, but it does make sense. And I, as I said, it wasn't meant as like a full on like bashing at wrestling, but it makes totally sense in terms of like right. when you're doing like, say like a dinner theater, you know, the crowd's right there. You kind of get off by, you know, doing the little ad libs, whereas in like the crowd, when you have a huge crowd, you have to do things and do them well, exaggerate it a little bit in the live setting. Right. That being said, out of curiosity, what is the smallest crowd, the smallest paying crowd that you worked for? I better tie that in because technically, you know, you work in class and whatnot.
But. Right, right. But you don't consider that a crowd. I'm thinking of two, and they were in probably between like 10 and 20 people.
I've been in those crowds. Those are painful. Like even as a member of the crowd, it's like I feel bad for, because it is hard. It is hard as you put it. Like no one wants to start that party of
right, but
being loud.
Back whenever those 10 and 20 people crowds, whenever that happened, I was a different wrestler. Now if it's a 10, 20 person crowd, like I'm still comfortable out there. And like I said, like, or I didn't say this, I'll say it now. You've got like, that's still 10 to 20 people and you can make them still very vocal and very loud with even just 10 to 20 people. And that's all you can do. So I remember I used to be like 10 to 20 people, like, and you don't necessarily phone it in, but now it's not like that at all. It's like these people still paid and I'm still going to entertain all of them as best as I can.
Well, I mean, you never know. You might come back at least a couple more times. So, you know, you got to put on a show for them. But yeah, I admit that's, I definitely feel like that for you guys. I feel bad for you guys having to, you know, try to, it's not a good payday for anybody when there's only like 10 people in the crowd. But on the plus side, you know, maybe a better connecting opportunity. You reference not saying things back in the day, or and how, you know, how you look at things now. How do you see yourself? Like, how do you feel that you've grown as a wrestler and performer compared to, like, say, the Texas days?
Well, I've been waiting for this singles push for years. I created this 13 Disciple character, an earlier version of it, but I originally created this character in class in the summer of 2020. So I've been just waiting for this opportunity to show what I do have. And but I would say since then, went off there for a second. Since then, I have definitely slowed things down a little bit and thought more about moments over moves. And that's really important. People are going to remember cool moves, but only if you make it a moment. So moments over moves always. That is how I've grown. And I've kind of known that. But having this singles run as a heel, as this character that I know so well, has really let me actually put that to work, moments over moves.
I'm a firm believer in that, and that's one of my little soapboxes I get in on this show quite a bit, is especially things with like selling, like take that breath, let the crowd, you know, breathe and let everything sink in for that moment rather than jump.
Right.
But since you brought him up, let's talk about the 13th Disciple. For those of you again who are not kind of familiar with Eric's work, within the past year you've debuted the 13th Disciple, God's Chosen, wrestler and God's Chosen Champion, at least up until recently. Tell everyone a little bit about him.
Eric Esknight, the Chosen One, the 13th Disciple, is a very complex character. It is, I probably have, I have a lot of years of character stuff that I could get through with this character. So I've been thinking about this character for a while. And like I said, it was inspired and created at the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy. So basically, Eric Esknight is a guy who thinks he is chosen by God, and he thinks that because he's chosen by God, he's better than everyone, like, in every single way. Like, there is, like, there's God, there's people, but then there's Eric Esknight. That's how he views it. And that's on purpose, obviously. And the cool thing about this character is, and the deep, one of the deep things about this character is he's like the toxic Christian. That's what he is. He thinks that he's above everybody, and he thinks that he's better than everybody, and that he's chosen, and that it's because of the Bible. It says here, like, I was chosen. You know what I mean? It creates this self-righteousness. So that's who this character is whenever you really break him down. And, you know, you can go deeper and deeper and deeper. But I would just watch one of my matches.
Right.
His goal as a character, we'll go into this. His goal as a character is, one, God sent him to save the sinners. But apparently, at this point in his life, he doesn't know what that, like, how he's coming off. Because the dude's a jerk, and he thinks he's better than everybody. So nobody wants to actually be saved by this guy. So his goal is to save the sinners. So he does that by yelling scripture at people, you know, saying you're a sinner to people, telling people to repent, which is never going to work. But people still do it in real life. That's his goal. His other goal is to fulfill the prophecy. And the prophecy is Eric Esknight on top of all of wrestling. So that is the prophecy that he showed me as a young kid. And basically, it's just my dream. It's just my dream to be on top of the world, to be the best wrestler in the world. But I'm tying it into the character, because I'm saying that he told me that that's for sure going to happen. That's the prophecy. And Eric Esknight's goal is to fulfill that prophecy, tying it all in. So that's a little deep dive into Eric Esknight, the 13th Disciple. But definitely watch the matches to kind of see that in action.
Oh, right. I mean, the wrestler is the action plus the character together,
right?
And obviously, like, I mean, fanboy moment, obviously that's one of the, like, I think it's fascinating, and I'm definitely into the character, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I asked you on the show. So you've been sitting on this character for a bit, and finally got the opportunity to, you know, let him loose, per se. What was the kind of genesis of this character? Where did you kind of, like, pull this character from in your early days?
So, like I said, this character is a real life person. Maybe they don't come out in the whole monk outfit. Maybe they don't got the big staff, but they at least they got the Bible at least. But this character is a real person. So, this character isn't just something I've, like, seen on TV. This is exaggerated, but the things that this character does, the things that this character says, the verses that this character yells at people, that's just basically what I grew up around. That was my whole life. So I came to Black and Brave, and I was not that guy. I was not Eric Esknight, the 13th Disciple. But I was a Christian. I came to the school, and so they thought, like, I was like a Bible thumper or something. You know what I mean? I'm coming from Texas. So I already knew, like, okay, that's kind of already how they're feeling. So what if I lean into this? So we're doing practice matches and stuff. And I just start doing like little stuff like that. I'm like talking about, I'm God's mighty hand, and just trying it out, seeing how they react. It's just, I'm performing, and this is during COVID too, so not in front of a lot of people. So you're getting genuine reactions. So I'm performing in front of my three coaches, my classmates, a couple other graduates. So I would say that's the genesis of this character. I kind of found out that what I was raised around, what was normal to me in Texas, I already knew like that these people that are like this, y'all are wrong, man. Y'all are seeing things from the wrong perspective. But whenever I came up here and saw the perception from here, I was like, okay, now I see what you see, and now I'm going to turn that up to 11. So I did that. I took this toxic Christian, and I took this guy who thinks he knows everything because he read a book. I took this guy, and I made him a character. And I tied him into my own life and my own life lessons, and have just added layer upon layer upon layer to this character.
And I see definitely parallels amongst, we'll say, various televangelists, when no name is going to be named. Just the stereotyping kind of goes in with them. On the flip side of that, you know, we're bringing up kind of faith and faith within a gimmick. Do you have any concerns about any sort of like blowback from, you know, portraying Christianity in this negative light, and going so far to say of using the good book is like even a weapon within the your matches? Do you expect any like sort of negativity to come back on that?
I could see it. I could see like someone like getting offended, but at the end of the day, it's wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna always bring it back to like, if someone was really to get offended, it's like, brother, you came here to be entertained. This is a character. This is not real life, right? You know what I mean? I can always fall back on that because, you know, The Undertaker did the same thing. Somehow he got people to cheer him for being a demon, actually. You know what I mean? Same thing. Like, so in a way, this is not something new to wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
But in a lot of ways, the way that I'm doing it, yes, it is very new and very unique. And sometimes whenever you do these new things that people aren't used to, they get offended. So I'm sure that it's going to happen. But at the same time, I'm not like getting, this isn't like, at this point, I don't see how people really could be offended because it's all been, nothing too serious.
Right.
When it comes down to it, nothing too serious. And I'm getting really deep diving on here and getting into details, but most people are never going to know that. Only the people that watch this podcast. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and
so tune into this podcast. Find out things you never would have known.
Exactly. And I just think, and I'm just thinking more like, not that I've heard any rumblings up here, but I think of like the horror stories of like, it's even like within the WWF, WWE, like Brother Love, like they got a little bit of blowback. And so they really had to reference that, you know, his book that he had, that he was, you know, using was not the Bible. It was the Book of Love. And there's a wrestler in the Deep South, and I can't remember his name, but he was also rocking some variation of like a televangelist gimmick, and like they had to qualify on their local TV that was not the Bible, that was like the good book or some other like generic variation of it. And you know, as I said, like, I mean, the character Eric S. Knight is obviously coming to the ring with the robes, the staff. Like, I would hope that people aren't taking it too seriously, but you know, there's always like there's always one person that's going to be out there,
right.
But you know, for the people who haven't seen him actually, Mr. Ed Snight comes out in the monk's robe, comes out with the staff. You have a disciple now, and Geroat.
Right.
Where did you pick him up?
where all the sinners, where all the sinners are at the altar.
So I was going to make a joke. If we're just going to talk about sinners, I mean, it's downtown Rock Island, but oh, ouch. I went there. Speaking of offending things, there we go.
But yes, yeah. That's a warranted question. That's a good question to ask. Like, you got to think about longevity when you're doing these things. Right. I don't want to just do this and then get canceled in 2 years. Right. So I do have to think about these things, and I do have to think about what I say and how I handle the character and things like that. And if you notice, like at SCW, at least, there are certain, it's kind of like at WWE, how there's like, you can't say hospital or you can't say belt. There's words that you can't say at SCW either. And when it comes to my character, there are words that I can't say. There are things that I can't bring to the ring. And there are things that have changed about the character over the last couple months that have shifted away from Christianity. Now I'm more in SCW. I'm more of a cult leader, and I have a disciple. Really, okay. I haven't used the Bible in SCW in months. I'm only coming to the ring with my cup and my staff. So this character is very, you can take it in so many different directions. Like, he's got so many layers. Like, I can be a cult leader. I can be someone trying to save sinners. I can be some badass hand of God. I'm chosen by God. Like, there's a lot of different layers and ways this character can be used. So I'm not limited to just the Bible. You know what I mean? It's just, there are layers. So that's one of the other benefits of this character.
Oh, exactly. And again, like in the grand scheme of things, this character is relatively new. So there is, you still have time to build the mythos around him, you know, as necessary. And even then, looking, you know, possibly years to the future, like, you know, are we going to see the pride before the fall? Is he going to, you know, how humble can he possibly become? Are we looking at a face turn in 2027 or something like that? There's a lot of ways we can go, and that's the beauty of the storytelling,
right?
But
it's funny. I don't mean to cut you off. It's funny you brought up the Bible as a weapon thing, because in my most recent match, there's a spot. I need to just send it to you, and you need to just like play it right here or something, or I need to send it to you. You need to react to it, because it was in my most recent match. I did something like that, because I haven't been able to use the Bible at SCW. So you'll get a kick out of it. You'll like it.
Awesome. The crowd was so huge at the last show, just because, you know, I was saying goodbye to the Coliseum. My seats were terrible comparatively speaking, and then I have my wife next to me, so sometimes like she puts up and then like I miss something in a split second of it. So I'm trying to think of what I could have missed, and now I'm extra excited. but talking about the stuff you bring to your room with you, actually she referenced it, and this is just more out of our curiosity. The staff itself, we noticed various symbols and like drawings on it. What is on the staff, and do they have any specific meaning to you and or the character?
Well, the staff is a gift from my grandpa. He did this thing. This is just to give you an insight to kind of like what I grew up around. Not that it was toxic at all. You know, I'm not just some guy who just hates Christianity. Most of my life I was a Christian, but this staff was a gift from my grandpa, and he used to do this thing where it's kind of like wrestling. You have this character, and you recreate. He did this thing where he dressed up like a frontiersman. He thought it was so cool. He was very interested and knowledgeable about those times. So he had almost like kind of like my how I have the robe thingy. He had like his own thing that he made. It was like this leather with like leather strings. It was like this, I don't know, frontiersman outfit, and he had a staff with it. So that staff is from my grandfather. That would be the meaning to me, but it's like also like in the Bible, Moses,
right?
He has a staff. Like there's a lot of biblical characters that have staffs, and like Moses's staff, I believe it turned into a snake. I used to be better. I used to have these things memorized, but I believe his staff turned into a snake at some point. But so there's mythos behind the staff in Christianity, and it's also like it's a weapon, so I can hit people with it. So there's the connection to my grandfather. There's the connection to biblical characters, and then I'm a wrestler, so I need. I'm a heel, so I need a gimmick to.
Right. I hate making weapons and things like that, but props. But yeah, you got to bring something. Oh, that's interesting though, because I mean, obviously, you know, that wasn't like you can looking at it, like you could tell that wasn't something that you just picked up at, you know, Spirit Halloween or something. That was legit. And I guess that's really interesting because I like. Not gonna lie, like in our conversation about stuff with the wife, when she asked about the staff, I wanted to just touch base on the staff, just to pad out time or whatever. Just kind of like, yeah, that's not just something like cheap. That looks, I mean, legit. And then now it's something. I mean, obviously it's legit if it's got some age to it too. So
right. And then I have like one or two other ones, but they're shorter and they're not as cool. So if that one ever breaks, I do have backups, but I don't want that one to break. I like that one. It's like the right size, the right weight, everything.
Yeah, that's that got deeper than I expected. Not gonna lie on that one, but
hey. Yeah. Like I said, man, there's so many layers to this character. Well, it's parts of me. It's parts of what I've experienced. It's part of, you know, that toxic Christian character. There's a lot to it.
Right. And tying it back in with faith, and we obviously we've referenced, especially with the character, we've referenced Christianity a bunch of times, but just kind of going over your career, faith has at least, you know, played at least on screen an important role. How much has your faith kind of dictated you know, how you do, say, business and go about things in the wrestling world?
I would say that I'm agnostic, actually, but I still try and lead with love. I try and respect everyone's opinions, but I would say for most of my life, the Christian faith played like an important role. But I still, like I said, I still have the same principles of love and peace and kindness. So it still plays a role in how I do business, whether that's personal training or just with people or with wrestling. I do try and have those principles in place.
I was just curious because, I mean, just going over the media that's available to you, specifically Christianity seemed to be kind of like a reoccurring theme, like in your travels, again, Christian right. Wrestling Federation, yourself and Malik, Bible Club, Prodigal Sons.
Right.
And then obviously now taking that heel.
It's probably always going to be a part of me. Yeah. So the faith, whether it's tied to the character or some other aspect of my life, it'll play a role because it's just been involved in my life so far.
I just especially find that interesting because wrestling up until, I mean, more recently, and even then, I mean, we obviously have some black eyes and bad eggs, but professional wrestling seemed to be kind of like the Wild West in terms of like it's the social aspects of it. You know, you hear the days of, you know, the bygone days of, you know, the bar fights and,
right,
you know, all, you know, the, I don't want to phrase this delicately. Yeah, well, I don't want to call it just deviances, but all the sexual dalliances that guys got into on the road, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just kind of interesting to me to see people who do, you know, identify as, you know, faithful, regardless of, you know, the faith they have chosen or has chosen them, and then getting into the realm of professional wrestling, which has been, you know, traditionally carny and very dirty. And obviously, you know, the backstage culture has changed a lot over the decades, but it's just one of my low key things that I find interesting.
Right. Yeah. The places I've been, I've had good locker rooms, and I don't really have anything bad to say about the locker rooms I've been in. I've been treated with respect where I've been.
Right on. As I said, like things are different, and even just the social aspect, that, you know, they aren't necessarily going out and, you know, getting wasted every night and doing every drug known to man anymore just to pass the time, because you have to be 800 miles away tomorrow with the rest of the crew.
Right.
I say, but like, yeah, because like, well, actually, looking at, since you're in you know, SCW primarily, I mean, there's not a whole lot of travel on that aspect. How often do you travel, say, for like other companies, or how much are you on the road?
Me and Malik have done a couple Texas trips. It's been a while. We were doing them a couple times a year, last year and a year before. We'd done a couple of these Midwest states kind of surrounding Illinois and Iowa. I just went to Wisconsin Friday. I had a scramble match. But this year, I would say last year I developed the 13th disciple character a lot at when it comes to actually doing and putting things to work in real life. You know, like I said, I've been thinking about a lot of these things, but putting them into work. This last year, I did a lot of that hands-on work with this character, and I got to find out what I liked, what I didn't like, what works, what doesn't work. So this year is really the year of the traveling. Yes, this year is my year that I'm trying to get eyes on me. So I have got plenty of traveling to do this year. We'll stay updated on that question.
There you go. Well, and obviously Black and the Brave is a good way, you know, have their connections too. And I mean, even if it is just in the Midwest, I know they have a very good relationship with AAW out of Chicago. Right. And obviously those with Eagle Eyes, and, you know, who know their SCW folks, you know, have gotten various tryouts and work, even with AEW and WWE, most notably looking at JT Energy being attacked by Bray Wyatt on SmackDown. So, I mean, there's obviously avenues for you to get out there, but getting out there, what are your goals in the coming, well, whether it's this year or in the future, what is Eric Esnight's goals for wrestling?
I'll be in WWE one day. That's always been the goal. And that'll be how it goes down. When I get to WWE, I want to be WWE champion one day. So you've got to say these things out loud, and you've got to work hard and believe in them. So right off the bat, that's the real prophecy. Eric Esnight, WWE champion.
I was just throwing in everything with the curiosity, especially, you know, with like the rise of AEW, and just, I mean, and not just with AEW, but anymore, like, it's a really good time just to be a wrestler overall, because there are so many avenues to be. And I was just curious, like, but I'm also, the old adage is you don't get into wrestling unless you want to be WWE champion either. And obviously that's a very elite list to get into.
For my goals, I'm in the right spot to do what I'm set out to do.
You're putting in the work. You know, I find the 13th disciple interesting, and interested to see where it goes, you know, current storyline wise, and just where Eric Esnight goes in the future. Cause I, you know, as a fan, I love seeing the guys that, you know, I've watched come up, and then especially watching them go out and do things. So I'm hoping, if your goal is WWE champion, I hope to see it. That would be awesome. At least as, oh, I mean, obviously awesome for you too, but awesome as a fan to see.
Right.
So, and as you put it, you got to put in the work, and, you know, sometimes it's all about manifesting as well, just putting out the hopes and dreams into the ethos.
And, you know, seeing progress on those goals. It's not just about, you know, saying it out loud, but like you said, working hard. You talked about. You saw JT Energy on WWE. Me and Malik and a couple other guys, we got some segments on WWE as well recently. So they're not just hopes and dreams anymore. Like, I've put in a lot of work, and I've got a lot to show the world. So that is my goal this year, to get eyes on me and show the world what I've got. That would be my goals for this year.
I think you're making, great progress from what I've seen. I'm all in for the 13th disciple character. I mean, no offense intended to, the prodigal sons, but like, because obviously, very impressive up and comers, and we haven't talked a whole lot about Malik, but like, he's a freak athlete in and of itself. I think of like some of the stuff he's doing, I'm thinking like compared to like, to say like Shelton Benjamin and whatnot, just
a lot of people,
freaky athleticism. But you're definitely kind of the, at least right now, things always change in the future, you're kind of the character guy, and that's what stands out, because
right.
I mean, no offense intended to everyone, but like, everyone's doing a dive nowadays. Everybody's, we referenced the spear earlier. Everyone's doing the spear as a spot.
Right. But hey, you wait on Malik. He's got some talents that people don't even know about yet. Like, and it's not like, he's got so many cool moves. Like, y'all wait on Malik. Malik's going to have his run, just like I'm getting my run right now. He's going to get the spotlight on him too. And he's going to kill it.
I have no
doubt. I hate that guy. I hate that.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's the Sammy and Kevin thing. And, it goes, goes back and forth.
Right.
But, and again, dude's amazing. And I mean, he just got off another run with the tag team championships as well. So obviously
he's a two-time champ already.
Yeah, so obviously he's doing all right for himself. He's just not, hasn't been chosen. We'll go there.
There we go. That's all you got to say.
There you go. I think we're kind of winding down everything. I very much appreciate you coming on the show and speaking with me and taking time out of your busy day to, talk to the guy via computer screen.
My pleasure, man.
I am going to go out on one more a little Ephus pitch on here. So looking at the ECW or the SCW locker room, myself pushing 40, not terribly athletic. Who in that locker room can I take? Like, I just, in a random match, we're just like throwing it out there. Open challenge. Ron Kammer comes to the ring. Like, who's the guy who laid down the open challenge that I could actually take out? And it's okay to say Timothy Regal if you can't think of anybody good.
I'm gonna say my boy Nico Klein. You could say, I dare you to try and take Nico.
I know
he's gonna love me for saying his name.
I'm gonna write this down next time I wander by the merch table and be like, hey
Nico, Eric, I'm just playing, dog. Yeah. I'm playing.
Eric says I can take you. Oh yeah, I don't think I can. That's why I threw out Regal out there, because I might be able to take Regal. Except he could take a kick. Like, I've seen footage. He could take variations of the drop kick. So I might have to wrestle.
Oh yeah, he did the thing.
He's the moonsault guy.
I'm pretty sure Colby Seth Rollins has that spot where he backflips off of Regal, right?
Yeah, he's the, what they call on the internet, the fat moonsault guy.
Right.
And actually, on his Twitter bio, he does note that he's the moonsault guy too.
It's clicking.
There we go. But that says my joke, because I'm not trained. I'm not athletic. I'm going to go after the commentary team. Except I can't go after Knight Wagner, because he's legit too. Like,
he's the number one guy in the Rumbles, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I love listening to Knight. But I'm gonna remember to tell Nico that, Eric says that I can take you, and then, hide behind my wife like a real man.
Yeah,
because we can make fun of him, but he's stacked too. He's just not, he's not cut. He's not full on like Rhino, but like, he's that kind of, like,
he's put in a lot of work. He's had a lot of progress. He used to be a lot softer, and he's looking good.
Yeah.
Shout out to my boy Nico.
You say, "Oh, you all guys, all of you are putting in the work, obviously," and it shows in ring. Getting off topic again, but just like watching like some of the people I recognize from security detail, and then like, wait a second,
that was you a couple months ago, and now you're in the ring.
Yeah, and some of them it's a little bit harder, just because they didn't, you know, they're not, going out of their way to say grow mullets or giant mustaches or whatever, but.
Sure.
Yeah, looking at the Brewsters and whatnot.
But they're easy to point out.
Yeah. But, you know, ending with, you know, the joke stuff. I do appreciate you hopping on and talking about the character of the 13th Disciples. I said, I find it very, you know, very interesting and one of the highlights of any SCW show. And, you know, not just, you know, blowing smoke up you, because obviously you're on the podcast and Matt Cage isn't, so you know, right. There you go.
Hey, and I put my staff in Matt Cage's back, man. I showed him what happens when you mess with my cup, when you mess with the prophecy. That's what happens. Matt Cage thinks he's on top, but my staff's still on his back.
And there you have it. Eric Esnight, independent superstar. I hopefully see great things ahead for him. I am thorough. I'm a big fan of his work. I go to a lot of SCW shows and have kind of watched him grow before my very eyes, and I'm looking forward to seeing his continued career journey. That being said, I am a terrible host, and I didn't give him an opportunity to plug his... social media stuff. So we're going to go ahead and do that now, and you'll find other links in the descriptor, of course. But you can find him on Facebook at Eric Miller, Instagram at Eric Esnight, all one word, and at YouTube at Fun Electricity, aka Eric Esnight Pro Wrestling. Also coming up in the show front, well, his shows, you can also find him at various SCW shows. And if you're catching this here in time, January 21st, 2023, they will be in Iowa City at Wildwood, Hockamania 18 Genesis. He will be there, and he'll also be at the Bluegrass Community Center for SCW Heartbreak Saturday, February 4th, 2023 as well. And of course, you can also occasionally catch him on the SCW Pro social media at SCW Pro. They also have a Patreon where you can get classic matches and whatnot as well, and he makes his appearances on there as well. That link I don't have right fresh on me either. Terrible host. That's why I just sit here in my basement rattling on incoherently. But that being said, a fun interview. I am hoping to see great things from him, and heck, maybe get him back on the show in a year or two and see how things have changed. Thank you all for joining in on the party. And if there's anybody, you know, that you want to recommend to try to get on this here show, you know, send them my way. The socials are in the deets as well. We're still going to have, you know, my plugs at the end of the show as well. But until then, thank you all for listening, and I'll see you all, well, later this week, because we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and hosted at Anchor FM. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review would also be helpful. Word-of-mouth advertisement, of course, is very important for us small podcasts. For my social media links, they can be found in the description below, but the Twitter and Instagram are both at The Nova of Cass, TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLW Confusion. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual chip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova. That is CassOnova. If you'd prefer more bang for your buck, go to patreon.com/Casanova, where for as little as $1, backers get access to the podcast early and without those pesky ads, plus other exclusive content. So head up the crew and join Maverick 45, Alan Schroeder, and Keith Wynn, and check it out. You can also find t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net/collections/theconfusionpodcast. There's hyphens in between the Confusion Podcast, of course. And for other business inquiries such as ads and sponsorships, please email me at rzkammer, K-A-M-E-R-E-R, @comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.